It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannocco, and Alex Lindsay are all here to talk about the latest rumors. A new pink iPhone, perhaps. What's happening with Apple TV? And some new numbers, very encouraging numbers for Apple Music. It's all coming up next. Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 468, recorded Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. Salmon is the new pink. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by JustWorks.com. JustWorks helps businesses take care of their benefits, payroll, and HR with intuitive software. Visit JustWorks.com and enter offer code MacBreak to receive 15% off your first year of services. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/MacBreak. That's lynda.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. I'm Leo Laporte, and I will recuse myself from all discussion of the Apple Watch, the iPad. I got a lot of tweets after last week. Renee Ritchie is here from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. I'll up the fanboy and the enthusiast and the
apologist.
Would
you turn that up to counter me?
Yes. I'm going to put it on 11 just for the rest of the
grumpy
show.
Grumpy old man that I am. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times also here. And nice to have you with your Canadian hat.
I will. Yes, this is my walking teapot Pixar Render Man hat.
But why does it have a maple leaf on it?
Because it's from like the Render Man conference from like 2011, which if I take the head off,
it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is the coolest hat that I own, and unfortunately, it's so cool that I'm now at the point where I kind of have to like stop wearing it so much because I want it to continue to look so nice that I could continue to wear it outside.
You need to frame it.
Even if it's impossible to explain, once or twice people will explain, "Oh, so are you from Canada? What's the teapot?" And I have to say, "Okay, well, you heard of Pixar?" Okay. Well, not the, and I have to go like three layers in. Now let me tell you about the difference between rendering engines. Now, Disney, when they split from Pixar, created their own.
And there's this guy named Jim Blinn, and there's this thing called Fong.
Dear.
All I hear is Canada, yay, Canada, yay.
Canada, yay.
You see, Big Hero 6 required a new model for translucency, which got them to rethink their entire idea of their relationship with light.
Hey, that's Alex Lindsay over here on my right. Hey,
I traveled. I just want you to know I traveled thousands of miles to be on the show today.
Renee Ritchie says you're not quite as good looking. The picture is not quite as good as it was when you were in Rwanda.
You know,
it's probably true. I'm sure your studio in Rwanda is better than our studio here.
It's just our office.
Algorithms are off.
The algorithms are off. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Maybe we can make Alex be an S-Log 2 today.
Yes.
And then use a curve map to. Alex was explaining to me before the show, in probably a way that was boring to everybody but him and me, about the new S-Log 2 shooting feature on these Sony A7 cameras.
It makes your images look like crap at first, but then they're great.
That's the funny thing, is that coming out of the camera, they don't look so hot.
Yeah, it requires a little post-production.
A little soft.
A little care, but it gives you a lot more, lot more in the future.
Does that become a problem with clients where you have to make sure I'm not going to show anything to anybody because no matter how many times I explain to them that no, I didn't screw up the shoot, right. This is just raw footage.
Well, the key is generally that you don't want to show the client something beautiful on set because then if anything goes wrong later, you actually want to show them something like, well, this is just a rough proxy. That's usually the key. This is just a rough proxy.
Rough proxy.
You know, don't explain it.
don't look at that. Pay no attention to that video tap.
Rough proxy. You show them a great rough key proxy. Or a great whatever that's live, and then they think that it's just going to get way, way better. And so if everything looks like a slow disaster on set and then it looks great, then they think you're magic.
Good news is we approach the release of new iPhones. Two or three new iPhones due September 9th.
at least the first, we know it's the first week, the Labor Day week of September. September 9th makes sense.
Yep.
Now T-Mobile and Sprint both in the U.S. Are doing forever iPhone Forever programs where you buy the iPhone, you pay a monthly fee, and then whenever the new iPhone comes out, you get the next one automatically for the same. You just continue for the rest of your life paying Sprint. What is it, $20?
It actually kind of works out when you look at the numbers of what you're paying.
Does it work out?
I think so. It's like it's
T-Mobile
like
was
$15 or $25 a month, and if you look at it, then you're not waiting for 2 years, and you're just. I mean, Sprint might be better, but of course, you'd have to if you don't want to actually use your phone. Sprint is great.
It's actually, but no, Sprint's $15 a month. T-Mobile's $15 a month. So yeah, you're right. Over a 2 year period, that's $720. That's about right. Did I do the math right? No.
It's about
what's 15 times 24?
That would be about $500.
That would be 12 times 30, so $360.
It's $600.
Cheap.
It's less than buying it. I guess that shows the resale value. The iPhone's pretty darn good.
Right.
AT&T charges.
And they're making money off your plan.
Yeah. And that's good. And because it's, of course, the third and fourth carrier, not the first and second carrier, they can do that. Verizon's charging $27 a month. And you upgrade only when you pay off the full price of the phone. So basically, there's no deal there. And AT&T is $32.50 a month, and you can upgrade every year.
I mean, they're all in range. It's a little cheaper on T-Mobile and Sprint. I think that it is. It does seem like they're kind of figuring this out on how to keep you tied in.
Yeah, Sprint's the cheapest right now, given the $60 unlimited everything plan, plus $15 a month. You're talking $75 a month for your total thing. That's a pretty good deal.
But the downside is that you don't get to remember the 2 years later, you can still resell that phone and get $200 or $300 back.
If you want
to
do the work.
That's a good point.
And also,
how much work is that? Right. Yeah.
And also, I kind of like the idea of someone being forced to actually think, okay, is this new phone something that I actually want or need? Will it actually deliver an experience that's going to be worth my while? As opposed to new phone, got to have the new phone. Good, got the new phone.
This page, by the way, is from Mac Rumors, an article yesterday in Mac Rumors, if you want. They made it very easy for us by giving us a table with a comparison. So if you're watching on video and you want to see where that is.
Thank you, Arnold Kim.
Yeah, Arnold's great. Did a nice job on that. And you know why it's great? Because it's almost impossible to figure this stuff out just by reading the web pages or the press releases. You don't know what the cost of anything is. I like unlimited data, I have to say. But I also like T-Mobile because of the international. So if you travel or you call Renee a lot, because T-Mobile also has unlimited free calls to Mexico and Canada.
I was making phone calls and texting and using the web.
It's awesome, isn't it?
In Istanbul.
It's free.
And in Uganda. Yeah. And it works. Not
calls
Orlando.
Are 20 cents a minute on T-Mobile, but the international plan.
But it's
data
free.
And texting
otherwise,
is free.
It's $3 a minute.
I know.
You know,
great.
And so it's the T-Mobile is key when you're traveling overseas a lot.
And then you can go get that, and we've talked about it several times. There's a T-Mobile pay as you go plan that's $30 a month. You only get 100 minutes of phone, but you get unlimited text and data.
Right.
100 minutes of phone. You know what? I doubt I use that in a month.
There was a great tweet from. Matthew Panzerino from TechCrunch, though, who was saying like how radically the phone industry has changed
over
the course of life of the iPhone. Before, you basically got nothing from them, and now they're trying to bend over backwards to make sure you get the next iPhone. It's a ridiculous reversal of their previous role.
Is that – can you credit Apple with that? Is you credit the iPhone with that or competition among the mobile industry with that?
I think it's competition. I think that anybody who has if it's been a while since you made an adjustment to your rate plan, if you walk into like the corporate phone store that you're getting your service from and say, here is what my plan is right now. I don't want to be locked into a long commitment and I don't want to spend more than I'm spending right now. But I can switch if I want to because I'm not locked in anywhere. What can you do for me? It's not even that they're going to cut you a special deal. It's because, well, let me show you what plans we have created in the past 3 years since we decided that, oh, wait, people actually have the ability to switch. We don't have them under our thumb anymore. Now we actually have to keep our customers. I did that like earlier this year and like, oh, so now instead of getting 2 gigabytes for free, I'm getting 10 gigabytes for free. And now I'm getting, it's like, oh, that was a very good, that was a very good phone call.
It shows how rapacious the phone companies were in years past. That's all. And they were really gouging
And we would still be getting it if it wasn't for T-Mobile and Sprint, in all fairness.
Right.
Yeah. AT&T and Verizon would still be.
Had they been allowed to combine as they wanted to.
Right.
These guys would still be dominant. But choice, and that's why we get ripped off with the internet service. because most people don't have that kind of choice. Well, and, four carriers gives you a great choice.
And when we look at also, like, the power of Google Fiber, in all credit, is now we have Comcast coming out with 2 gig connection, you know, 2 gig service for $300. It's still a lot more than Google Fiber, right. But that wouldn't have occurred without Google Fiber.
I agree. Google Fiber is equals T-Mobile in this equation, right?
Yep.
Several of the carriers saw what it was like to not have an iPhone on their network. Like they tried to play harder ball, and it didn't work for them.
Right.
But the other thing about the iPhone specifically is it's an event. It's like a giant movie premiere, and it happens once a year. It happens on all carriers everywhere at the same time. So the climate for competition around an iPhone launch is significant, which is why I think we see things like Forever iPhone. It does happen with every phone, but their launches are scattered throughout the year, different times, different carriers, different models. It's not as easy. But people who want an iPhone, they know they want an iPhone. It's like a singular thing. So it makes sense to market to those people, because maybe you'll get a couple percentage points shifting here and there. It's like every year you get a chance for a do-over on your carrier contract.
I think also another thing is changing. And Apple's dipped its toe in this, but companies like OnePlus and Motorola are all in. Google did this for a while to less effect. You know, Samsung, you can't get, like, this is the new Note 5. You can't get this unless you sign up with a carrier and and extend your contract.
You can't get it in Europe.
You can't get it. You can or you can't?
You can't get it in Europe.
Yeah. But you can get an iPhone without a contract now. They didn't do it right away, but they did it after a few months. You can get a Motorola phone. It's the only way you can get a Motorola phone these days. Right. Mm-hmm. It's the only way you can get a OnePlus phone these days. And I think some people, especially as we get away from these subsidized prices, and people know, I know how much this phone, you know, is costing. This was more than an $800 phone. Yeah. So when Motorola comes out with a $200, or for the Motorola X, the new Moto X Pure Edition, $400, now you say, that's worthwhile. It's unlocked. I could put a SIM in it. I could choose my carrier. I could move around. I think at least sophisticated customers appreciate that.
The carriers are going to do everything they can to obfuscate that, especially in America in the front door. They're going to say $15 a month. It's $15 a month.
Yeah, what's it like in Canada? There's TELUS, there's Bell, and there's Rogers, right? You have three?
Yeah, we have three big carriers, and they have some spin-offs, and there are others that got bought out.
But we have U.S. Cellular and some smaller
absolutely.
Ones.
And we used to have three-year contracts, which was horrible.
Wow.
And now they've gone down, but it is slowly changing. But I think it's – like, people who are sophisticated are going to shop around and will know the real value of the price. But I think people still going into a carrier or into an Apple store or online shopping, that's going to be a different experience, especially if you walk into the carrier store and they can give you that $15 a month. I think that's why they're trying to get out ahead of this. They don't want you to look at a $600 phone. They want to see how it can get you on a 2-year deal.
What's interesting is in the U.S., T-Mobile and Verizon both now have eliminated the contract and have gone to you pay the price or you amortize. You know, you borrow the money and you amortize it. According to NBC News, just minutes ago, they just tweeted Sprint will also be dropping its 2-year contract. So now it's AT&T only. Requiring those contracts. And I suspect that they're going to go too. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to have to go, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And also, again, if you go in, just make sure you ask if rates go up after a certain amount of time. Make sure you ask if you're being asked to sign a contract. But I'm still with AT&T mostly out of, you know, okay, well, I may as well save myself some effort and stay with AT&T. But I'm still not under contract. I'm still free as a bird and saving a lot of money.
Yeah, thank goodness. You know, this was messy. And, you know, it may not just be competition. It may also be congressional inquiries because Congress was I don't know what the upshot of that was. But
I think it's competition. I think that a lot of these lesser tier services make people realize that we're paying way too much and getting way too little.
Right.
And it's once people realize they have a certain amount of freedom, that's when they start using it. Did I ever tell you the reason why I almost dropped AT&T out of spite 4 months before the launch of the first iPhone, because I bought a new phone. I bought a Windows phone that I really, really liked. I moved my SIM from the old phone to the new one. I got voice and text, but no data. And after a lot of tech support calls, found out that it was because I have an old SIM card that doesn't have enough memory on it. And so, okay, great. All I have to do is get a new SIM card. They would not give me a new SIM card without putting me on a one-year contract. I was not under contract at that point. And I had this conversation with them saying, there is no technical reason why I have to be under. You're not giving me a special deal. I'm giving you $15 for you to send me a new SIM card. And you're saying you will not do that unless I'm doing that will put me on a 1-year contract.
Isn't that frustrating?
And I've been your customer for years. Darn it. And finally, the only thing that talked me down from this, I did use the even you're gonna put me on this contract even though I feel like I really have to switch to some other carrier out of principle. No, I'm afraid that we have to do that. There's no way we can give you a new SIM card. And the only thing that talked me down was Apple had not announced who the exclusive carrier was going to be, but I was pretty sure it was going to be AT&T. I had you ever have those things you split yourself into with the mature one has to talk to like the 7-year-old kid saying, Andy, are you going to be getting an iPhone next year? Yes. And then you'll have to be under contract with that. Yeah. So why are you upset about this?
Yeah.
Because that's a good reason, but you're going to be under contract anyway.
They had you by the short hairs, Andy. That's what they had you by.
And when I went back in a few months ago, they were like, oh, well, you're not under contract. You're free to go. Oh, and you understand what the idea of an unlocked Android phone is. Yeah. Let's make you happy.
Yeah. Thank God. And, let's give Apple a little bit of credit. I mean, they changed the whole landscape in 2007 with the release of the iPhone. It took a while, but 8 years later, things are a lot better.
One of my favorite stories was when AT&T was pushing back heavily on Apple, and they said, well, we're going to have to escalate to AT&T management. And the person on the other end of the phone said, well, we'll escalate to Steve. And that apparently never happened again.
Yeah.
Well, and I think on the not only are they competing with the cell companies are competing with each other, they're also competing with Apple and with, Android to some degree because – Apple, they're slowly, this whole like Wi-Fi calling over FaceTime and all this other stuff just slowly keeps on getting tighter and tighter and tighter to a, when I'm in Rwanda or I am constantly making phone calls on, FaceTime and Viber and, other things like that because, it actually sounds better than the other solutions. And so over Wi-Fi or whatever. And so it saves, obviously thousands of dollars. And so the I think that they're competing with a lot of different things that all came from these smartphones.
Let's take a break. We're going to come back, talk more, lots more to talk about. Alex Lindsay's here. It's nice to have you in studio.
It's good to be here.
Appreciate that. Not even jet lagged. I hate that. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Inoko from the Chicago Sun-Times. We're talking about Apple. And if you are in the chat room, we appreciate your feedback. I've been actually stealing jokes and material from the chat room all day without any credit. But that's life.
That's the way we are here.
You're like under a 2-year contract. They can't go anywhere else right now. Our show today, software update to 10.10.5. We'll talk about that and also an iOS update, 8.4.1, in just a little bit. But first, let's talk about Audible. On your way to work, on your way to school, Audible. You may be wondering why I'm singing that. We actually had a jingle. Remember that?
What is it? What was the jingle?
I have it somewhere. I should play it. Audible.com. It's the world's best. They've been with us for, long time, probably before the iPhone. I know I joined Audible in 2000, 15 years ago. I had to get a special player to listen to audiobooks, but it was still a heck of a lot better than a box of cassettes in the passenger seat.
I had
those
box of cassettes.
Me too.
And CDs.
Uh-huh. Audible is amazing. If you go to audible.com right now, just take a look at more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all kinds of literature, fiction and nonfiction. Even periodicals, lectures, performances of all kinds. I just interviewed on Triangulation Elon Musk. I'm sorry, I didn't. I interviewed Ashley Vance about his book, Elon Musk, which was fascinating. Highly recommend. That's a great audio book. And I've been lately listening to a lot of the great courses. This was something that I used to pay a ton for. You'd order the great courses and you buy them. They weren't rentals. And I'm so thrilled that they've got the great courses now. Because I was just in Germany, I got fascinated by the Middle Ages. I'm listening to a three book series on the Middle Ages by a professor from William & Mary. And it's great. You feel like you're in college again.
I don't want to feel that, actually.
You know what? It's good because there's no test.
Exactly.
There's no grades. I don't have to get up in the morning. I love it. I'm loving it. Audible is full of great stuff. Great, great books of all kinds. And there's something about listening to me. Well, I'll tell you, it's the same reason we love podcasts, because when you're in the car, you got a long commute, it's just, it just takes the pain out of it. There's The Martian. We love that. I think Jason Howell is making a suggestion. Please watch the read The Martian before you see
the
movie.
I've added it to my I've bought it.
Isn't it
so
great?
It's in my list. I haven't started it yet, but I'm going to.
Oh, you haven't listened?
I've made the next step. I don't have a whole lot of time, spare time.
We're going to get you a book free right now. All you have to do is go to audible.com/MacBreak, and you're going to sign up for that gold account. That's a book, or actually it's a credit, but most books are one credit a month, plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I love it. Audible. And, you know, we had a family in the studio. They're going driving around together, different ages. Audible's great for that. When we used to do road trips with the kids, I'd get young adult books. And it was so much fun. These are actually great books. Actually, mom and dad enjoy it, but the kids dig it, and it's
fun. My dad, when he was driving my kids down to the shore, and he said, oh, I was listening to this book. It was great. I was like, what is it? The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I was like, you were listening to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo
with
kids
in the
car?
But that is a
he
great.
Said they were asleep.
That's a wonderful audiobook. This is new. Audible just added this, and it's great because for people with Chromebooks and stuff, you can get the app, but you can now stream from the website. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
So you can actually start playing your books directly from the website when you're logged into your Audible account. So they've got a web interface now. And that is fabulous for people who don't have, like the Chromebooks, you can't put an Audible app on there.
Right.
What are you listening to? This is my book on the Middle Ages. I'm sorry to make you listen to that. What are you listening to right now, Andy?
Actually, I just started a book by David McCullough.
I love
him. So you're already starting pretty good.
Yeah.
It's called The Greater Journey: Americans in Paris.
I've read that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's all about the 1800s phenomenon of Americans essentially getting their last few years of self-education or formal education in Paris, about how, you know, like Samuel F. B. Morse arrived in Paris to study art, but because of the culture he witnessed there, because of the science he discovered there, he left Paris as an engineer and went on to invent the telegraph. You have people like there's all these little stories that go for like decades throughout and talks about the cultural and the development influence that Paris had on all these people. The biggest storyline is Augustus St. Gaudens, who is the famous Beaux-Arts sculptor, and how he basically became like the preeminent American sculptor, doing all these monumental works in New York City and elsewhere, based basically on not just the techniques he learned in Paris, but basically how this experience changed him, all the way to having adulterous relationships that he regretted. So there's a lot to digest here. It goes through the Franco-Prussian War and how that turned that city on its ear. Other Americans coming and going, abolitionists who were sort of not really interested but not involved until their time in Paris. It really makes you think about these not moments in history but places in history, that if you were born at the right time, at the right place, and had the right opportunity, you could go into this place and become the person you were destined to be. Whereas if Paris had not existed in this form, you get the impression that a lot of American cultural history and even scientific history would have been very, very different. And it's David McCullough, so he writes like a charm.
I wish I guess he narrates the abridged one. I wish he would narrate the longer one.
Edward Herman, though, doesn't he? Yeah, Edward
He's
Herman
really good.
Is the longer one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you know him. You'd recognize him. He's a great character actor.
Yeah.
With a beautiful voice. Yeah.
I mean, that's another cool thing about Audible, that oftentimes there will be an abridged and an unabridged version. Because for me, the more David McCullough you can get, the more you can get. That's the better.
Actually, yeah. But Herman also does the abridged. So.
Yeah. But maybe you want to sort of, you don't want a month long commitment. Yeah. You just want something for a good car trip.
Edward Herman is always the patrician, the New England patrician. He played Roosevelt, I think, in a movie. And he's great, but he reads it so beautifully. Couple of tips. If you have an Echo, an Amazon Echo, you can say, Echo, read my book. And it'll pick up where you left off. Or you can say any book in your library by name. But you can also say, read my book. And whatever you're listening to last, it'll pick it up.
Yep, that's every time.
So
my kitchen has never been cleaner since I connected Audible to the Echo. Because now it's like my inclination
is
to spend time in the kitchen. I'll just dump the pot in the sink and I'll take care of it later. And I say, what the heck? So and so, read my book,
And so I'm sort of interested in the story that he's telling. And before you know, I'm actually scrubbing countertops.
Yeah.
So that's what. Yeah. That's how. That's
you'll have a cleaner kitchen, and you'll be smarter thanks to Audible. There's the
pitch.
I'm
burning up a lot less now.
Audible.com/ no more dysentery. Thanks to Audible. Audible.com slash MacBreak. Get your sign up for that account. Get your first month free. And because I know sometimes people go, oh, I don't know. Can I listen to an audiobook? Would I enjoy it? You will. I promise you. Audible.com/MacBreak. But you know what? This way, no risk way to try it out for yourself. You're watching MacBreak Weekly. Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We're talking about the latest Apple news. Now, there were two big updates. And I guess I haven't updated my my Mac because I see I have 10.5.5. Apple's always a little cagey about the security. In fact, when you read both 8.4.1 and 10.5, it's not clear these are security updates. They're security updates.
There's a whole list for 8.4.1. There's a massive list of security updates.
You need these updates, right? Tell us about them. What are they?
So, I mean, it is a voluminous list. It fixes, as much as we get publicity, especially around this time of year, because Black Hat is happening and there's a lull in news and people are interested in putting a lot of headlines out there. There's just a wide range of security fixes that Apple has been collecting as they do their normal patch updates. iOS 4.1, in general, it fixes Apple Music. It fixes a lot of accessibility stuff. So Apple Music is completely accessible over VoiceOver now, which is awesome.
But I think a lot of people look at that and they say, oh, it's just an Apple Music fix. If you're not using Apple Music, I don't need that one. You need that.
No, you need it. No, you absolutely need it. And the one thing that, and I've been harping on this week, but the one thing that I like about this sort of stuff is that they pushed out 8.4.1 to every phone going back till 2011, all on the same day, to everyone in every region, and no carrier in the world interfered with them.
Yeah.
And that is still one major advantage that I really hope everyone else manages to figure out because we need that stuff.
Yeah. Right. Many Android phones still susceptible to stage fright because Google just doesn't have that kind of clout in that kind
of control. Can't. Like they were pointing out the Nexus, like the Galaxy Nexus, which is a 2011 phone, Texas Instruments stopped making the processor. So it's very hard to patch that kind of stuff.
Right. That's Dvorak's phone. I gave him a Moto G just so he'd be safe. Where do you find out about the security updates? It's kind of, I mean, you can click that link, but they're fairly cagey about what it fixes.
It's on the support. There should be a link. Like if you see the security website, I'll pull out the link for you, but there's a whole list and it's just voluminous. You should see 8.4.1 in there. Yeah, and if you click on that, it'll give you the full list of security patches.
So this is really not something to ignore. There have been some serious issues, both on the desktop and on mobile.
And again, most of these are not in the wild, and most of these aren't remote code executions. So they're not things anyone should panic about, but they're things that may eventually work their way into other exploits. So you want them patched immediately. It's almost like preventative medicine.
Yeah.
And the really good thing is that Apple and Google both are, because we sort of get caught up in the patch hype. Like, when is it going to patch? Patches take a while because you have to test and make sure they don't break anything else. So what these companies are doing that's so great is they're doing things like malware definition updates, revoking certificates, and doing a lot of things like Apple is doing the system integrity protection, which is going to make sure that if something does escalate to root, it can't do the kind of damage that it used to be able to do. And all those things, when the patches come, it's great. But until the patches come, they give us better protection than we might otherwise have.
This Safari patch is very important. It's a cross-site scripting vulnerability that you really want to make sure you get that patch. This is for iOS 8.4.1. Look at all these WebKit patches. These are important. Do not ignore them.
And we're in a whole different – I think we're really in an entirely different environment when it comes to our security. I mean, it is really heating up.
Isn't it?
And I think that we do have –
I don't know if it's cause for panic.
Not panic, but it just – Vigilance. You know, I think that there's, you know, this is really becoming, I think that the average citizen's in the crossfire of a lot of, and I think that in a lot of ways this was created by our own government, you know,
maybe
doing surveillance and counterterrorism and so on and so forth, that some of the techniques I think are opening that up, and other governments, China, Russia. So I think the governments, unfortunately, their cyber war that's going on between them is starting to affect all of us, and so we just have to be a lot more aware.
Bunch of updates to Yosemite 10.10.5, which came out on the 13th, a few days ago. Again, these are the security flaws, and it's a long list. Does this hit ThunderStrike? It probably doesn't.
ThunderStrike is a Mac vulnerability.
Well, I'm talking about 10.10.5 now.
Oh, 10.10.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 10.10.5, as far as I know, they did a lot to sort of prevent it as much as possible, and this should fix that as well. It came out just before the show, so I didn't look at it yet.
Yeah, a lot of updates here. Holy cow.
And the thing is, to Alex's point, I mean, we're getting almost a privilege escalation vulnerability report a day now in headlines. And we're getting some that are absolutely true, but they won't affect most people. And some made CNBC and MSNBC last week, which detailed things that were patched weeks ago. Yeah. And were no longer a threat to anybody, but they had, you know, your iOS device can be hacked and all your data stolen as a headline. And some people think that's good because it keeps companies on their toes, but it starts to desensitize. Like, it desensitizes our readers to the point where they're like, can you wake me up when it's something I really have to care about? And if there is, like, if someone finds an exploit in x86 and it affects every computer in the world, we've used up all our wolf cries and all our skies are falling. So,
well, I wish we'd be more responsible. It's really simple. Turn on automatic updates, and when you see an update, do it.
I don't turn on automatic updates because it does things, you know. But I definitely update it when it's convenient for me. The same day
don't
I get it.
Download cracked apps.
I
would do it with iOS. I would definitely not do it on macOS because the number of times in the past 5 years that something I really rely on it broke because of a seemingly inconsequential software update are too good to.
That's happened on iOS. Remember the update that disabled the fingerprint reader on the iPhone.
But that's not the same thing. It's like for me, something bad that happens to my phone is usually at worst an inconvenience. If something bad happens to my working Mac, that means that I'm not making money today. And there are days where I really need to be making money. But it's a multi-tiered problem. Another one of them is that, speaking of crying wolf, a lot of the mechanisms that Apple uses to get us to update just aren't effective. Just this afternoon, once again, as I sit down in front of this computer, there's another, hey, you have updates. So I'll click on that. Click on it, and it tells me that, oh, there are 4 third-party apps that you haven't used in about 3 to 8 weeks that have incremental updates to them. You learn to ignore that, and you start to even resent the fact that, wow, you're interrupting me to show me this dialogue about something that's not actually important. It'd be nice if they had a way to segregate those and say, here, this one is bordered in red. It's telling you there is a critical security update. Yeah. We really, really, really want you to download. This is not something that you tell us do it tomorrow. This is something that we would like you to make time today to do it right now.
Microsoft used to take the cake for that. I think they fixed that lately, but Windows used to reboot.
Yeah.
You'd be in the middle of something, and Windows would just say, hey, I got to reboot now. And it would just install it.
I'm still amazed with my Surface every once in a while. Just like, you will now do this.
You will now update.
I'm just like, really? Yeah.
So, but I think in general, unless you're Alex or Andy, it's certainly prudent to wait a day or two to make sure there's no big showstopper like a fingerprint reader not working. But that they fixed almost instantly, and the word went out right away.
And again, I just wait 24, 48 hours. And then that's all. You know, I just want to see if anybody, because people complain pretty quickly. That's the great thing about, you know, the internet.
It is true, though, that not on these updates so much, but there are 0 days. Actually, I think there were 0 days on Thunderstrike, but I might be wrong on that. There are 0 days, which means that people are, as soon as we learn of the exploit, people are already taking advantage of it, in 0 minutes. And those are the ones where really the updating soon is important.
Yeah.
Especially when you update your GitHub site before you tell the company about it.
Well, the real thing that's an issue is spear phishing attacks, targeted attacks. Right. So if you're in a business, I'm sure the IT departments are very vigilant on this. But this is how Sony Pictures Entertainment got hacked. It was a targeted attack.
Well, and we do a lot of corporate streaming where we stream from a lot of headquarters. And, you know, they definitely, I mean, this is like a war for them. I mean, it is like if you're a large corporation, this is like a constant issue. And they're constantly vigilant. And they have a huge staff that's. Want every port that we need open to do our little thing is like it needs to be VP level, you know, approved. It's quite a thing.
It's why we have the better technologies now. Like the malware definitions can stop you from downloading stuff. Gatekeeper, if the certificates are revoked or doesn't understand the certificate, it'll give you a huge warning and make it hard for you to download it. System integrity protection will limit the damage you can do if you do escalate to root. So those kinds of things, I think, is part of the future, is that layered defense where you're not just counting on a patch, or you're not just counting on telling someone not to click a link, but you're doing everything you can between that file going live on the internet and them installing it and running it on their machine to stop them from doing it.
Yeah.
it seems like we're also unfortunately away from the time a couple of years ago when we could say, okay, yes, technically there's this vulnerability, but these circumstances under which someone could actually make this attack effective are so rare that it's not going to be distributed far. You probably don't have to worry about it. Be aware of it, but don't worry about it. And now you become aware of these layered attacks where, yes, it would be almost impossible to do if not for the fact there's a vulnerability in Flash that allows somebody to inject a critical piece of code through a web page. And what are the chances you're going to visit one of those sites? Well, how about what if there is a corrupted server and a very, very prominent ad company, and someone managed to compromise one of those machines and put that code on the Flash that compromises that pushes it to a site that you do use that actually manages to take care of this one little bug inside your Mac, and then suddenly you're closing down your bank accounts and explain to your mortgage company why
instead you of don't saying, have. Yahoo, you'll be saying, what about this T-Pone exploit? Because apparently 10.10.5 does not fix it.
No, so that's the one I was talking about where I believe he gave Apple a couple hours notice before he put it live on GitHub, which is less than ideal. No,
that's not good.
And so what this is it's also a privilege escalation attack, which means that if, to use a really bad analogy, they can't break into your house, but if they manage to get into your house, they can then open up your safe. So it has to somehow get on your machines. It has to be either downloaded or someone has to go and install it if they want to do something to you. And the basic, it's already fixed in Yosemite. It looks like in El Capitan. It looks like the changes Apple made as part of El Capitan stopped this from working. But if you're on Mavericks 10.9.5 to Yosemite 10.10.5. It is vulnerable. He provides a fix on his site. You need to be fairly sophisticated to use it.
Well, and I'd be very careful about applying a third-party fix to...
absolutely. And it's not a signed fix, so you have to jump through hoops to apply it. Apple is aware of it now, and they're working on fixing it, so that should make its way into the next update cycle. But in the meantime, it's the same thing. It's not in the wild yet, as far as we know, but still be safe. If you think that you might be targeted, don't download cracked apps. Don't, hit phishing links.
So Apple's doing something called, software integrity?
System
integrity in El Capitan. And in your article, you say that's probably what's blocking T-Pone in El Capitan.
Well, so the system integrity protection, that was misreported somewhere, but that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Okay.
What system integrity protection does is it doesn't stop something from getting root privileges, but what it does is mitigates the damage that it can do once it is root. So the problem with the Unix systems traditionally is that once you get root access, it was basically game over.
Yeah.
You were just a super
user. So is this that rootless thing they were talking about?
Yes. Yeah, system integrity protection is the incredibly new Microsoftian name for rootless.
Rootless is good, although it doesn't really inspire confidence, whereas system integrity protection does.
It's also not a polite word in some Commonwealth countries.
Oh, my goodness. I always forget root means something else entirely. In Australia.
Roots Athletics in Canada was always very popular with Australian tourists.
Yeah, the Australians love it. Yeah.
shall we discuss the discount women's fashion stores in New England called Frugal Fannies? It actually exists.
But the thing with system integrity protection and things like application transport security is designed to, if something bad happens, just stop them from doing as much damage as they might otherwise be able to do.
Is there anything in the operating system that's really looking for, if your computer starts hitting certain servers or, it pays attention to, I don't know why that computer is hitting that server all the time and I'm going to raise a red flag or bring it to an alert or anything else. If you might have installed something that is now doing keystroke or doing any kind of searches that are sending them, to a place. Is there anywhere that the operating system is looking for that?
No, but you could get little snitch.
Right.
Yeah, no,
they should build a little snitch-like capability into the firewall. Right now, as far as I know, the Apple firewall watches incoming but not outbound.
Right, because it seems like that would be something that they could, if you suddenly see a whole slew of Macs, looking at this server in Russia, or a server.
Or even your Mac. Forget a whole slew, just my Mac.
But I'm saying, if Apple was able
Apple
to see a lot of those.
I don't know if Apple would see that traffic.
Right.
And also, Apple's traditionally not, doesn't really want to have anything to do with your stuff.
They don't
want
to see that traffic. Your ISP would see it, but I don't think Apple wants to see it. That's why they should build that into the firewall. The firewall should be monitoring outbound connections, I think. Yeah. Little Snitch does a great job. The thing about Little Snitch is it's a little annoying because there are lots of legitimate outbound connections, and it'll warn you about them. But you can always say, okay, that one's always okay.
You can whitelist, yeah.
Yeah. And it's still up. It still works, right? I mean, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. I didn't know, I know. I think for a while it didn't work. There was some kind of dark period.
Well, things like now, like a lot of apps, including our friends at SuperDuper, had to update because things like system integrity protection prevented them from doing things that they used to do the way they used to do them.
That's why you might say, well, why isn't this in the operating system to begin with? That's why.
Yeah.
People get used to using features of the kernel and so forth in oddball ways. I'm sure Waze not approved by Apple, or at least discouraged by Apple.
So you take sandboxing, you take a lot of these technologies, they have to work very hard to make new versions of their app sometimes.
Right. It's okay. Break the app. I'd rather you break the app than some other app breaks my machine. Hey, the new pink iPhones are here. The new pink iPhone. I don't know if this could easily be an edited image. The iPhone 6S in pink. What do you think?
It could be. It's the Burberry effect.
Yeah. I don't know if they want to get into colors that are so specifically associated with gender identity. Not that people would not want to have a free choice of whatever. But
where would you put it in Target?
Yeah. Well, anywhere now, because everyone's free to get it.
You know, pink was associated with boys 100 years ago. I just found this out. Pink used to, and who's wearing a salmon shirt?
Yeah,
I think that phone would look quite nice in my pocket.
That's the difference between pink and salmon. I think that salmon would be less. It would still be pink, but it would be less controversial. I can't believe that we're saying that a pink phone would be controversial.
The 5C was salmon, Andy.
But I can't
well,
say
that. I don't want
a phone that's named after a fish.
I would love to see an oral history of the colors, developing the colors for the 5C line, because none of those colors are colors I'd ever seen before. In life or in the Pantone book.
And you Johnny have and the to color expert.
And any other company that would say, well, how about red? People like red. But let's rethink red for a moment. What does red mean to us? And how does that interact with the flow between the technology and the person? Like,
unapologetically red.
Like Web 9864 is reminding us that film girl Christina Warren was desperate for a pink Apple Watch band and finally got hers. And paid 250 smackers for it.
The modern buckle. It just started shipping.
Yeah.
All I can say is I don't want my 6-year-old daughter to see this because she would demand that.
I think Abby would want it too.
Yeah.
What color? I can't remember what color. She had a 5C. I think it was a bright color.
Oh, just as a reminder, the iPhone 5S debuted the quote-unquote Kardashian phone, which was the champagne gold iPhone. And before it came out, everyone was like, there's no way anyone... And then it came out and people were so upset they couldn't get one.
I love the gold. I got the gold MacBook. I love it.
It's amazing, but people, we overestimate and underestimate people at the same time because the S models are traditionally not as big a design change, but it turns out that if you just do a superficial change, like introduce a new color, suddenly people are desperate for them. So it's proven to be a very smart strategy.
Frankly, because I don't feel like there's any killer, I think we talked about this last week, there's any killer feature in a new generation. It's going to be faster, it's going to have force touch, which I don't consider a killer feature. Maybe a better camera.
People didn't care about Touch ID or the better camera in the 5S, Leo. They want
the color. It's gold. I think they'd be smart to do
this. I have a phone that nobody else has. They know I have the latest, newest phone.
That's, you know what? Don't deprecate that. That's a big part of it, right? You want,
absolutely.
That's why you buy a new, when it's the new hardware, because, hey, see, I have the new phone.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, Apple users have a different thing where they don't allow a whole lot of different individuality with these designs. So if you have an iPhone, you know that you have one of the three that everybody has of this model. And then the case designs don't change typically that much from year to year. There's never been a revolutionary. I think they've only done maybe two revolutionary case designs in the entire history. So when they do something like there has never been a candy apple red body color iPhone before, that becomes immensely interesting.
Wait a minute. Didn't I order a pink phone for you last week? I completely forgot about that. You know what? I need to call you and get your shipping address so that I can have that sent out to you.
Okay.
I think I might have forgotten the colors. I can't. Is it in my shopping? Is it in my
shopping? Pink with red accent, I think.
Pink with red. Oh, see, they emptied my shopping cart. So I'll. Pink with red accent. That's what you want?
Yep.
Okay.
I think it was pink with red accent colors. And I think the front was. I think I actually picked black for the contrast.
That sounds right. Yes, I got I gave Dvorak my Moto G. I felt sorry for the poor guy. He was using a Nexus, a Galaxy Nexus, which is a fine phone but old. Yeah. So pink. You mean raspberry?
Yeah, I think that's they didn't have pink available.
And then a gold accent, you said?
No. Red.
Red accent.
Wait, is that an actual red pink accent? Like lower
metallic less, violet. Oh, there's pink.
Last one.
Metallic. Oh, that's really nice. That's a handsome phone.
That's it. I'm serious. That's a really cool phone.
All right.
And it's Don Legere's phone.
And I was gonna write. I think I wrote with love.
Or hugs.
Hugs from Leo. That's right. I couldn't fit with love. Hugs from Leo. Okay. I just need your address. That's all. Put it in the chat.
I'll give you a Skype chat or whatever.
Yeah, no, if you're in the Google Doc, you could put it.
There. Yeah. I'm in the Google Doc.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
This will make a nice companion because just yesterday I ordered a Swedish Army surplus gas mask bag
nice.
For my iPad. So I'm going to really enjoy taking this phone out of my Army surplus gas mask bag.
Swedish Army surplus gas mask
bag. It's really cool. I was watching the Mythbusters special for Where's the Lost Ark myths. And of course, Adam Savage has to wear the absolute screen correct reproduction of the costume. And that was the first time as a Raiders of the Lost Ark fan since I was like, what, 10, 12 years old, I found out that Indy satchel is actually a World War II surplus gas mask bag. And so that made me think, wow, it's a nice size. It's a nice shape. I wonder if I can find and now I'm looking on eBay and places for gas mask bags. And I find this Swedish bag. It's got a leather bottom to it. It's got these extra pouches. And it looks like something you'd charge $1,000 for if you were really good at taking money from dummies.
So one thing that would perhaps get me rushing to the store to buy a new iPhone, as much as I like pink.
Rose gold?
Or rose gold, as you might call it. Would be a much improved camera. According to a Michael Andrew in the Michael Report, significant improvement, 12 megapixels. Apple's setting its sight on the amateur DSLR market because you can record video in 4K. But although I can do that on some other phones from the company, which shall not be named.
But I do think that the 4K video on the iPhone will match a 4K video on the Apple TV.
That would be interesting, to say the least. Of course, then I have to have a 4K TV.
I have one of
those.
You
have a 5K iMac.
They're cheap now. I mean, you can get a Vizio for
$700. You can almost not get a 4K TV these days.
It's
All right. So is that credible, that rumor? It's got a big exclusive on it.
I don't know how exclusive it is, but everyone I know who's familiar with it says that it's a hell of a camera that's coming. And
it's
given the history of the cameras,
it needs to be. As we said before, Apple is, there's a lot of stiff competition.
And Phil Schiller spends 5 or 10 minutes on stage talking about it.
Right.
They have to give him something to talk about.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I think that Apple's actually fallen, at this point, Apple's actually fallen behind. Because I'm lucky enough I get to test pretty much every camera that's out there. I'm sending you a link. Yesterday's experiment was I decided that I was going to use the Apple Watch camera app as a remote trigger for squirrel pictures. And so that's
wow.
What the squirrel like literally
so you, like you're
on,
not is, your phone is distant from you, so the squirrel's
exactly.
not scared.
So it doesn't get spooked. I'm not like hovering over with the camera. So that's the squirrel like 2 inches away from like the camera lens. And it's
that's
nice,
actually a great shot.
It is very nice. But I couldn't help but a few weeks earlier I had taken shots with the Samsung Galaxy S6, and the critter was about a safe foot or two away, and I was able to take similar pictures and crop them down and get the same kind of resolution. So that's kind of shows you the difference between the two technologies, that when you have a really good high megapixel sensor, it doesn't matter where you are. You can crop it down and still get that sort of detail, and you don't have to, you don't have to buy a $400 accessory just to get squirrels' faces in your images like that.
Yeah, the only thing, I saw a lot of people do the comparisons over the weekend with the new cameras, and it's an 11-month-old camera by now. Like, it was really good when it came out, but Apple's been working on it for 11 months, so we should... Like, it should be better than what it was then.
Even last year, it was starting to show its age. It used to be, it's common, I'm glad that there's common wisdom that more megapixels does not make a better camera. However, there used to be unavoidable trade-offs of having a higher density sensor on a mobile device, that a lot of those have been nicely mitigated by engineering, hardware engineering, and by software. So I'm really excited to see a higher resolution iPhone camera coupled with their image processing, which has always been the best feature of any iPhone camera.
Well, there's as you said, there's a lot of competition. I just got the Note 5, this S6. Both of those are excellent cameras. In fact, one thing the Note 5 does and the new S6 Plus will do is it streams live to YouTube with a push of a button. In fact, I think I'm streaming right now to YouTube.
We want that competition. It just makes everyone better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be something, the kind of thing I could easily see Apple doing is having that built into its iPhone. I don't know.
But where would it stream to? That's the question.
FaceTime.
Which service?
FaceTime, no.
We call it Apple Music Video.
It streams straight to Kinect. Lady
Speaking
Gaga,
of that, I'm actually really interested to see if Apple does live streaming to Apple Music for bands. Like, you know, if they allowed that within Apple Music, I think it would be really interesting.
Like to Kinect? You mean like you can just stream straight to Kinect?
Sorry?
Stream the straight
Kinect,
to
they
Kinect.
They have that, yes. Kinect cab. Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
I wonder where this is going.
It'll probably get some engagement going for Kinect.
Do I have to invite people? Oh, it's invitation only.
It might be private. A private stream?
It's a private stream? I should be able to see it in my own.
Impressed.
Yeah, it's pretty cool,
huh? Let you do a private stream.
Oh, really?
It's not an off.
I think they have a deal with the... Oh, I didn't press that button.
Okay.
No one's invited yet. Tap to share your link with viewers before starting your... Okay, I'm going to invite people.
Me. It feels like Periscope is easier.
Set it up. I've never used it, so maybe that's part of the issue.
I think that's the thing a lot of people are missing is the Periscope Meerkat of, you know,
it's
just
so
turn it
fast.
On and
yeah.
You're,
yeah.
You, I mean, with Meerkat, you almost start streaming before you knew you were streaming. Like, you know, it's.
Here's a picture I just took of you with the.
That's great.
The
gorgeous.
A Note 5, rather. Yeah, I think it's. Yeah, he is gorgeous, isn't he? He's an attractive man. All he needs now is a pink iPhone.
I'd
glad you've come to my office. You realize that most of my students have started their college application process long before now.
I can let's zoom in a little bit because that'll give us I don't want to do it on your face here. Let's do it on that. So, all right, there you go. That's almost 1:1, and that's a pretty high quality for a camera phone. Did it butt hurt you that President Obama, when he put out his summer streaming music list, put it out on Spotify, not Apple Music?
He's a president of everybody, Leo. He's not a president of Apple users.
So there is Dave Hamilton is at the Mac Observer has created an unofficial president's playlist for Apple Music. Low Cut Connie's Boozophilia is not on it, not available. but other than that. It's kind of cool.
Hamilton is a master mixer.
This is called masterly use of social media, is posting the POTUS's playlist on Spotify. And ain't too proud to beg by the Temptations, the Isley Brothers, Little Dylan, Tombstone Blues, Coldplay, Howlin' Wolf, Wang Dang Doodle.
So much better than previous presidents.
I don't think George H.W. Bush really liked Wang Dang Doodle that much. I don't, yeah.
Probably would ask you what you were referring to, sir.
Nickname for the housing secretary?
Huh? Yes, Wang. Hey, Wang Dang Doodle, get in here.
You're doing a heck of a job,
You're doing a heck of a job, Wang Dang Doodle. Nappy Roots, Good Day. John Legend, Andre 3000, Green Light. There's a little bit of Push Your Love Girl by Justin Timberlake. Shake It Out, Florence and the Machine. Pretty awesome. The President's Summer Playlist on Spotify. And thanks to Dave Hamilton on Apple Music.
Credit to his profession.
That's a little reggae. A little reggae.
I'm not making any accusations, but I would love to hear the oral history of the assembling of that list. Whether it was... Mr. President, we've assembled 200 potential tracks that have been cleared where nobody shot anybody. There's no naughty language in here.
Yeah.
If you could just tick off your 12 favorites of these, or whether it was just, nope, here's my iPhone, here's my playlist, take whatever you want.
Wouldn't that be interesting? I'm going to follow this in case, 57,000 followers. It's only 20 songs. That's a little disappointing.
But I mean, like, do you really want music advice from the president? Isn't that like sort of getting presidential advice from a musician?
Remember when they when the Queen got an iPod? People were seeing what was on the Queen's iPod. Yeah. I mean, you know.
This could, this,
I like Alex Moody's playlist.
We've now heard this president sing at least twice, and we know he's good.
Yes. You know?
So
I think his reversion of Amazing Grace would be very nice to have.
Well, that and singing Al Green at the testimony.
That was good. He only did a line, but that was a heck of a line.
Definitive Al Green.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We're coming back with more Mac news, including a new Magic Mouse.
Crickets.
How exciting is that?
When was the last time we used that?
Magic trackpad so bad.
It's funny because on Twitter we were talking about this, and Dvorak, of course, very famously poo-pooed the mouse when the Mac first came out.
Right.
He said, I don't know anybody who wants one of these. And we all mocked him. He said, I'll go ahead, get it out of your system. That was, you know, 1984, folks. And then he said, by the way, how many mice are there on this table? Zero. Ding.
How many mouses?
No mices or mouses. I'm sorry, mouses. We already covered that, last week. This episode
Mac
of...
The Mac Break Weekly style guide has ruled.
I know, I've failed you. Mouses. Our show today brought to you by JustWorks.com. I'm going to speak to the HR department, the business owner here. We have the same situation. You know, when you have a small business, you have a small group. And managing HR, managing your medical is complicated.
Do
and you don't get a good deal often because your group is so small. JustWorks solves this. JustWorks helps businesses take care of their benefits, their payroll, their HR. So you can take care of what you need to, your business. Casper uses JustWorks. I like that. Trello does. A lot of startups do.
All I can say is if you, we tried to manage our own payroll in the early days.
Me too.
That cost me.
It's bad.
It cost me $40,000.
In fines?
Yeah, we screwed it up.
Yeah, it's easy
you know,
to screw
like,
it
you
up.
Know, you,
so
you,
easy
you
to screw
know,
it up.
We didn't round something off and put something in. Next thing you know, they come and it's $20,000 that you didn't pay right, and there's another $20,000 or whatever.
Just
you do not want to do your own payroll.
We'll do it for you. They'll process your payroll automatically. They'll set up your team's benefits online, and you will save on health care. They'll help you do that, too. It's really simple. And we know you're geeks, so you like a nice software interface. And I have to say, JustWorks is state-of-the-art. They're one of those the newer guys who get it. A lot of the older payroll companies tried to digitize, tried to get technical, and they did this crap software. Not JustWorks. They do it right. And by the way, that $40,000 fine, they do compliance as well. Automatic payroll and compliance. Grow your business, not your busy work. The average setup time for getting JustWorks going, 3 minutes. Casper uses it, Imprint, Reboot, Trello, hundreds more. What are you waiting for? You can get a demo at JustWorks, JustWorks.com. If you want to sign up, we're going to get you 15% off your first year of services with the offer code MACBREAK. Find out how you can offer your team the benefits they want at prices you can afford without all the hassle of doing it yourself. Or if you're using another company, a company that does it right, JustWorks.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK for 15% off your first year of service. And we thank them so much for this, not only for their support in MacBreak, but for helping so many people do a better job. JustWorks.com.
That typing you heard, by the way, in the background was me sending it to Carlito.
Yeah.
Like,
hello.
Let's get this. Let's
don't try to do that. So we've talked about this over and over. And, of course, the John Patchkowski on BuzzFeed says the Apple event will include the Apple TV. And I think we all concluded last week Apple probably just gave up trying to get its negotiations together. Now an article in Bloomberg says, the live TV service is delayed at least till next year. Negotiations have stalled. Peter Burroughs, Lucas Shaw, Jerry Smith writing in Bloomberg. Does that jibe with what we all thought? I think it does.
Yeah, it's glacial.
I still think that what Apple should do is if they can't get the live with the TV networks, they should start making it available, making the platform available to live streaming like Twit and Huffington Post and everything else. Like
that's what Spotify did, right? Spotify, knowing that at any point the music labels could say screw you, Spotify, started offering video content from and audio content from non-record industry sources like Twit.
Right.
50 people on Spotify listened to Twit last week. It's a little disappointing, but given they have 60 million users, but
it doesn't have to be everyone. It could be. It doesn't have to be like it's open to the public, but it could be like looking at broadcasters, having people be able to apply.
I think it's a good idea.
And getting. And it also helps them start to test the platform before.
This Bloomberg story says that part of the problem is that Apple wants to offer a package of popular channels for $40 a month, which is roughly half the average cable bill in the U.S., and that nobody's going for it. Everybody's saying, yeah. What, are you crazy? Are you nuts?
Negotiation point.
Yeah. Money's fairly important to these companies.
These aren't software developers. You can't push them around.
Yeah. CBS, Fox, NBC, kind of the big guys. In fact, in this Bloomberg piece, they're saying Dish tried to do something similar for its Sling TV, and it took them years. And Sling only has ESPN, TNT, and a few other channels.
But the other danger is that once you start unbundling, it becomes difficult. Like, for example, if every channel says, okay, you can have us a la carte, but we're $10 each, it quickly becomes just untenable for a person to have any amount of television.
Look how much HBO Now is. It's $15 a month.
Right. And I think Showtime is.
Yeah. I love HBO Now, though.
Because you don't have to have a cable subscription.
I don't have a cable.
See, I have a cable
subscription. How many of those could you get?
I use HBO Go.
I'm never going back to cable.
Like if ESPN is $15 and ABC is
$5. Do you save money? I bet you don't.
It's not about money.
It's about
I don't want my kids to watch ads.
Yeah.
No, like literally.
Ads, no ads.
My kids went on vacation. So they haven't, when we moved to Pennsylvania, we just had internet. And they're just watching, they're still watching their shows and everything else. They went on vacation, they went to a TV, and they started watching all those little ads.
They wanted all the little toys.
Like, they didn't have any of that before they saw it. And suddenly it's like, can we get this? And I'm like, I am done. Like, we will not have TV in the house. You know, like it is just.
Is he not the worst father ever?
Yeah, I mean, they watch all the TV they want. They just don't watch the ads. I mean, they watch their.
How do you know what you want until you see an ad for it?
Until you're told. Support
they
the economy.
They still see
Alex.
Things in ad. Here's the thing: is they still see things that they want, and we look at whether it has an educational value
Alex, they're going to get into junior high school. Kids are going to say things to them like "weebles wobbles," but they don't fall down, and your kids are going to go, "What? What are you talking about? Weeble wobbles?"
Not only that, but they're going to grow up thinking that sex is a function of emotional connection.
Oh, my God.
That's going to leave them really handicapped.
It's going to put Tinder out of business.
Oh, my goodness.
Got to link it to a commodity early on or else we'll get the whole wrong idea.
What will happen to the hookup culture?
No one's going to want to buy anything anymore.
Oh, Alex.
I'm just telling you.
Look, as somebody who does ad-supported free media...
But these
I just
want to
say
ads.
That they're good ads and everything, but they're ads. And there's probably some parents says, I'm not going to let you watch Twit because you keep wanting, a subscription to lynda.com.
we do good ads. That's all I'm saying. It's not like
I guess no parent ever said that, but.
We hope.
But I can't do quality content that's high enough. HBO, you get what you pay for, but I can't do anything that's going to get people to pay me money for this crap.
Well, the the thing is that
we can't make anything
my
that
kids,
good.
But there's good there's this and that. If my kids ask for a lynda.com subscription or Audible, I'd like that.
Daddy, can we have Just Dorks do our HR?
Yes, exactly. Daddy. They'd be starting a new company because they'd be watching on lynda.com and
Daddy,
figuring out how to. Run
I want
Excel
an audible.com account.
Yes, it's, I'd be like.
See, I wouldn't mind that.
Not mind it at all.
Yeah, we try not to have Captain Crunch with Crunchberry ads.
That's the whole... Yeah.
Although, Quaker Oats, I'm just saying,
the box?
I'm not completely against it.
Call us. Call.
Call me, baby.
But it does devalue the product, though. I'm sorry. The show that you're producing could be devalued by the wrong kind of advertising.
Oh, I agree.
I like Project Runway. I like the shows on the Food Network. But whenever I'm watching those two channels... The remote is always at my elbow because I have to mute it as soon as the commercials
but
come on.
That's why Project Runway was in the Hallmark store last week because don't you think that was paid?
But that's absolutely. But that's okay. What I'm offended by is you start especially on these basic a couple of these basic cable channels. You start off it's going to be 4 minutes of lawyers with slip and fall commercials and shady financial institutions and rent to own operations that really remind you that there are a lot of vultures in this world. They're not people who say, do you have a need for our product or service? We're willing to sell you our product or service. Right. Let us explain to you the values of our product or service. It's more like, I bet there's a way that we can sell this person a phone and wind up owning this person's house.
All
we have to do is trick them.
We substituted Alex Lindsay's coffee with salt crystals. Let's see. Let's see what happens. Apple is building a self-driving car. It's not a joke. It's real. Oh, they even talked to a test track in the Cupertino area. It's called Project Titan, according to The Guardian.
It's confirmed, Leo.
It's confirmed. They have been talking to locations, test tracks in the San Francisco Bay Area, so they can test it. They went to Gomentum Station, which I've never heard of. This is huge. 2,100-acre formal naval base near San Francisco that's being turned into a high-security testing ground for autonomous vehicles.
I wonder if that's the same place where, speaking of Mythbusters, I wonder if it's the same place where they were doing some of their driving myths. They mentioned about an abandoned military base that has houses and streets that are laid out and has stop signs and everything.
Yes, that's
essentially like a whole town. Yeah.
It's the old Concord Naval Weapons Station.
Yep.
It was a World War II era. It has 20 miles of paved highways and city streets with buildings. Perfect place to take autonomous vehicles.
Whoa. My guess is they just leaked Apple's Top Gear competitor that was going to launch with the new Apple TV.
Or shoot the next Stephen King miniseries.
I was gonna say, whoever thought of that? Genius.
Whoa. That's a lot of acres. 2,000 acres is huge.
Yeah. Can we just point out that it's not confirming any Apple autonomous cars?
No, they just went to talk to these guys.
Yeah, well, no, it's also like they've got CarPlay, which is coming with manufacturer integration, and those are unannounced vehicles that need to be tested somewhere. And they have various states of technology in automotive space that may or may not include full self-driving cars that still need to be, there's nothing, like it's a great, fabulous story. Kudos to The Guardian. Totally misleading headline.
Yeah. We know about all of this background stuff that's been happening. Meetings have been going on and so forth. I wouldn't be surprised if they're investigating it. I'd be honest with you. I'd be really reluctant to buy an Apple car because I feel like they would replace the brake and the accelerator pedal with a single button.
And the steering wheel, Leo.
That would just, forward is forward, back is brake, or something like that. And
it's autonomous. There's no buttons.
They're not going to do it. So you don't think they would do a car unless it were completely autonomous?
No, I think the autonomous thing is just a really sexy headline for the car. I think it's the same thing when we go to CES every year and they explain that people are petrified by technology and you have to give them a very smooth gradient curve where you walk them carefully through giving up control over many stages and with many options. So it'll be a car that gets more and more automation as time goes on.
Whoever bought the Concord Naval Air Station,
I know,
and said, you know what we're going to do with this? You may think what we're going to do is we're going to have lease it to Google or Apple. And
I bet you they bought it. Well, this is my guess. They bought it for thinking about movies.
Yeah, because it sounds like the perfect movie set.
And ended up
they tried
with
Cobra.
Gold line.
Cobra didn't want it. They tried Spectre.
Or if you had an atomic bomb you wanted to test.
Too close, Leo.
Or a place to kidnap and gas spies that are about to retire because they know too much about your government.
We could call it the village.
You can just hide in a refrigerator.
Good morning. Oh, that'd be great. Let's build the village.
If it fits in with Google's Project Loon, those big balloons that are autonomously stay in the air for a number of times.
You're testing gamma.
Patrick McGoohan was right. He saw this years ago. Is that a reference that our younger generation probably has no idea what we're talking about?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You don't know about the prisoner?
Oh my God! I will say that I have never made people happier in my life. That when I see people at Comic Cons dressed in just like the prisoner, and I just walk past, don't acknowledge directly, just simply mutter, "Be seeing you."
And
they're like, yes, somebody knows them. Oh my God!
I am number two. Who is number one?
You are
number nine.
You have to see at least the pilot. It is amazing.
It is psychedelic.
It's 1960s spy stuff.
Yeah.
I don't want to give anything away, but Patrick McGoohan seems to be a spy who wakes up in this village after he has stormed out and retired from announces.
Well, remember Patrick McGoohan, and you probably are too young to remember this, but I loved the show. Was the star of a British show called Secret Agent Man. And that's the song, Secret Agent Man.
All I can say is that's why it's a very young Rumpole of the Bailey.
Yes. He's that. But there was a different number two every week. He was just one of the number twos.
again, there's almost no question that's in your mind right now that is answered, even if you see all 17 episodes of the series.
And when they try to get out of the village, she's a Visinho. She's a some sort of supernumerary in the village. He's decided he wants to escape. Let's watch for a little bit. Number six, he took his number off. He's going to get out of the village. Is this the first? This must be the pilot.
I think this is the pilot.
Yeah.
It's all very nice. Oh, no, this isn't it. This is a later episode. This is when he runs for government office. They have elections. They have newspapers. It's a very pleasant place, but you have no idea who's running it or why. You have no idea why he's there. You
and
have
he
no
can't
idea
get out.
What they want out of him. You never know what his name is. He's only referred to. But,
if he tries to get out, which he's doing.
Who are you? I am number two. Who is number one? You are number six.
He's trying to get out on the boat, but anytime you try to get out, you know what happens. Yeah. This giant ball comes out and pushes you back. Yeah. He's trying to get away from the ball, but he can't. The steering wheel's not working. And here comes the giant ball to usher him back.
Such a brilliant example of like creativity coming from cost cutting, where they had like these sentry monsters that they couldn't make work. So they finally said, "What if we just blow up a weather balloon, and actually it becomes actually quite menacing."
And then now, of course, he'll wake up back,
knocks him out, and then reset to zero.
I wonder if that's on. There must be some way to watch that on Netflix or something.
Yeah.
I stream it? This is all on YouTube. That was a Blu-ray somewhere. Somebody's got a Blu-ray of it. The Prisoner. Search TV. Let's see. 1967. Availability. You're too young to remember this, Andy. You must have seen it.
I saw it when it started arriving on A&E. The A&E channel before, when they were actually involved in arts and entertainment.
Yes.
Instead of none of the above.
I don't think
I got absolutely hooked. They had to buy the DVDs because
I don't think.
I mean, it's fast. You keep trying to make sense of it because it is so sophisticated and so layered.
Yeah. Looks like it's only available on disc.
Oh.
Good reason to keep that Blu-ray player active. It might be a bag of hurt, but it's the only way you can watch The Prisoner.
That's their slogan.
Wow. There's so many great things you cannot get in any form or fashion.
No, that you can always get it.
Well, there's ways. If only there were some site that would just archive this stuff and offer it for download.
If only there was something that you could
some way to do that.
Download content.
Apple might be bringing fighter jet technology to car windshields. I love these headlines. Washington Post.
I'm thinking Sidewinder missiles here. When they say that.
Heads-up display.
What about transforming? I think that's an underutilized marketing angle.
I want a Apple transformer.
Ejector seat.
Optimus Prime.
If there's lots of traffic, I can just pull these handles and suddenly I'm exploded and hopefully in the direction of my meeting. And then I parachute down, and if I live and I'll avoid the traffic for sure.
This is almost like an Onion article. This is the Washington Post, Drew Harwell. The world's most valuable company is, quote, very likely, end quote, working on a 27 to 50 inch head up display, a technology most famously used by jet pilots that could project vivid icons and information for drivers while on the road, a tech analyst with Global Equities Research said Thursday morning. Trip Chowdhury.
God.
That's all you need to say. That's good. I like that, Renee.
God. If you look at his greatest his statements about Apple over the years have been head pounding desk worthy.
It's a great headline because they might be becoming a top breeder of championship show poodles. They probably aren't.
They might.
They have $800. They could buy a couple of poodles.
They got some room in the new campus.
There you go.
So, Dr.
Apple, use the. Sorry,
Dr. Dre gave Apple Music an exclusive, as he should, now that he's a billionaire thanks to Apple. on his latest album, Compton.
I don't think he needed to make money on this album. That's all I'm saying.
This is this the soundtrack for Straight Outta Compton?
No.
No?
This is his long anticipated. Is it the follow up to Chronic? I don't remember if he did one between that, but it's a follow up to. It's a long anticipated follow up album.
According to Apple, 25 million streams in the first week, 500,000 downloads on iTunes. Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
And you ended up getting him number two?
Yeah, number two slot behind Kill the Lights from country star Luke Bryan.
Country.
Damn it. Every time.
Did you know the story behind Country and Billboard?
No.
So I was actually in the music industry. I was working for Sony when this happened. But they changed the way. So in a long time, as you know, when we were in radio, the playlists that we sent to Billboard and to R&R Records was, you know, we kind of made it up. You know, like, yeah, it's kind of about what we're playing. And in the same way, sales were kind of just the manager at the store would make a list of this is the top selling stuff. They wouldn't give you numbers. They would they'd make a list. And Billboard moved to electronic
instead of calling the stores and saying, hey, what's selling today?
Yeah, what's your list? That you would literally call it in. 1, 2, 3,
radio,
or you'd fax
radio
it.
Radio would do that.
Stores
radio.
Would do it. Stores. And that's how Billboard, you know.
Billboard charts were stores, were sales.
Yeah, Billboard was a mixture. It's a mixture between sales and radio play. But they changed the way that they did that to electronic in like 91 or 90 or something, somewhere in that range. And literally out of nowhere, country and heavy metal like Metallica and Garth Brooks and all this stuff suddenly just went right to the top. You know, like this has been ignored.
Because people listened to it and bought it and liked it.
The managers at the store, at Camelot Music and everything else, they liked alternative and they liked pop and they liked whatever. But they didn't listen to this.
But the people
that were actually buying it were, and there's a lot of people that buy country
music. People like country.
There are a lot of people that like country music and a lot of people that watch NASCAR.
Apple is continuing its push for Apple Music. When does the 3-month thing run out?
I started end of June, so it would be end of September.
So we got another month and a half, 6 weeks. So about halfway in to the 3-month trial. And you could bet that the biggest ad push is going to come about 2.5 weeks into that. I would guess. Here's the new ads. These are ads promoting the idea of discovery on Apple Music. Leon Bridges, who
is music has never had a bigger place in our lives.
These are all artists who...
To have access to nearly all the music in the world at our fingertips is remarkable.
James Bay.
There needs to be a place where artists and fans can discover one another.
Friend?
Where the entire experience, from playlists to radio...
smart to push the artists.
Could be Trent Reznor.
Powered by people who live and breathe.
Sounds like it.
That would be really interesting for Trent.
A place that brings you the artists you love.
I be.
As well as the artists you're about
to. I like to mispronounce artists' names like Whale.
It's too bad they don't have anything in color there.
It's a black and white.
And that's surprised and disappointed, really. Music.
All the artists you love and are about to love in one place, Apple Music. I think that's actually, I like that because, after all, isn't it about the artists? And if you're going to succeed with Apple Music, you have to give people the sense that this is the one, this is the system that artists are benefiting from, right? I think that's
you also have to counterbalance because people are complaining that there's so much in it and that it's confusing. And you have to show them the value of having things together. So, for example, the For You prediction engine is right there. You don't have to go to a separate app because people won't go to a separate app. And the radio stuff is all there. Everything is designed so that it's not too much effort to get to any one place. That does have a huge complexity cost, so they have to work on making that easier. Yeah. But the whole value is you can have all your music in one place. You never have to, for 1 second, think, oh, what app is that Dr. Gray album in? Is it an? Oh, it's not an iTunes. No, it's not in Spotify. No, it's not an Amazon. Where did I put that?
And so
they still have problems to solve. And I'm not just tweaking. I mean, I think that they have fundamental structural problems that they haven't successfully addressed yet. I was using Apple Music again over the weekend, and I couldn't. As has been happening increasingly, as I'm just thinking, if only I had one app called iTunes and one app called Apple Music, because there's this opera that I bought a few weeks ago, and I put it in my MP3 library, and I uploaded it, and I synced it, but it's impossible for me to get it. See, I can't figure out how to get access to the MP3 version that I own. It would only let me get access to the version that is available through Apple Music. And it's like, even if it might be the exact same music at the same bit rate, it just rankles me that, look, give me the copy that I own. Don't give me the copy that I'm leasing from you. Why can I not tell you there's a difference between those two?
According to a research study from a company called MusicWatch, 77% of Apple iOS users in the U.S. are aware of Apple Music. 11% use Apple Music. Now, that sounds to me like a disappointing number, especially given that they're giving it away for free and all of that. But that apparently is pretty consistent with usage among people who purchase from iTunes
or
use iTunes to manage their music collection. Apple Radio had 18% penetration among iOS users. 11%, though. Of course, there's so many of them that you can make a pretty good business out of 11%.
Well, there's two things there. One is that I think it does point to Apple was woefully behind on this. They should have done this 5 years ago. That would have been 60%.
Right. You
know? The other thing is that it does point to a huge opportunity for Apple. I mean, if they've got 11% out of that right now, there's a high probability that, you know, with the right promotion as it develops, there's a lot of room for them to grow.
Only 6% of iOS users who use Pandora are using Apple Music. In other words, they found what they want. They don't, and this is that switching cost, right?
I have to admit, I still haven't moved off. I mean, I play with Apple Music, but I still listen to Spotify. You know, just all my lists. I haven't figured out how to get them all over. And
I'd say it's pretty good that remember the service is only 2 months old, and if they've got 10 million users to begin with, that's not a failure.
We should look at the number in October, but I think that
two-thirds of the current users said they were extremely or very likely to pay after the trial ends. That would be good. That would be a good conversion.
6 million. Yeah. So, 6-7 million.
On the other hand, 61% report they'd already turned off the auto-renewal option. I did that because I just didn't want to accidentally auto-renew into it, right? That doesn't mean I won't do it. I just didn't want to accidentally do it. My Music is the most popular feature on Apple Music. Allows you to manage music and create playlists. Not a surprise. That's the reason I like Spotify is the playlists. Beats 1 is being used by 30% of Apple Music streamers. 27% are using Connect. That's interesting.
You think that maybe we can look forward to another, not crisis, but maybe another moment in the PR history of this service when people, after 90 days, people are suddenly decide, okay, well, I don't want it, or it doesn't automatically renew. And now we see how elegantly this service can say, okay, now let's make sure we know which tracks this person owns already, which ones were imported, and which ones we just simply don't have to give them access to. Will I get back access to everything that I should have access to, even though that now I'm not actually subscribing to anything anymore? I'm sure they plan for this. I'm sure they've got a system they think is going to work, but That's another part of customer satisfaction that has yet to be determined.
Yep.
You want to see another ad? This one actually features the artist James Bay. It's 30 seconds. You'll be seeing this on TV soon. And I'm craving. I don't know the artist. Do you guys know the artist? I guess that's the point, right? God, he's got to be thrilled. Yeah. Oh, there's the silhouette. So that's how you kind of subtly know that, oh, this must be an Apple ad.
And Trent Reznor did do voiceovers for other ads, so it's most likely.
Good for him.
I don't know whether this one, I haven't seen a reference, but earlier ones in June were done by Trent Reznor.
Boy, that's an ad for a guy, an artist. If he doesn't, if he doesn't make it after this, nobody likes him. here's another one. This is a pianist named Scott Joplin. No.
Yeah. You know, they should really activate. Do you realize that the iPhone does have like a tap for exposure? So if you just tap like the part you want to be in good exposure, because it's being confused by that bright background. So that's a very newbie mistake, I think.
That's
kind of embarrassing.
Kygo or Kygo?
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to harken back to the iPod aesthetic.
It really feels that way. Yeah, it's a little monochromatic.
I think that just this could be a service that Apple could provide to the artists. Is we're going to run ads across the entire world for, you know, if they did one of these a week, you know, these artists would be throwing on there
Can I point out that this artist almost certainly works for a label and that this label may indeed have a relationship with Apple that involves something like this? I'm sure Apple gave them all sorts of, you know, sweeteners.
We'll take
three artists. You'll pick and we'll promote them.
Right, but I think that if Apple kept on doing those, like just kept on running different ads with different artists,
iPod ads launched several major artists.
Right,
The 1, 2, 3, 4 song.
Yep.
So those things have always been powerful publicity.
But, you know, Apple has the money that they could do two or three of those different ads a week, rolling them through and having them, you know, constantly there pushing Apple Music, but also really being a huge, because I know that when your apps are included in Apple's recommendations or in their ads, it is, I mean, I've talked to app developers, it's like money from heaven. I mean, it's an incredible impact.
Every day it rains, apples from heaven. We're going to take a break.
Golden apples.
And come back with your picks. So, gentlemen, ready your picks. It's pronounced Kygo. AC/DC is huge. Kygo is popular. I like the piano music, but I don't know. Our show today brought to you by, look at this, lynda.com. I think your kids would love this.
How convenient.
They would love this. The online learning platform, 3,700 and I've lost track. I think 70 on-demand video courses in every area of technology, everything from taking better pictures, using Photoshop, using Microsoft Office, OS 10, Windows 10. Burt Monroy has a great series there. Deke McClellan, you know Deke, right?
I do know
great
Deke.
Photographer. Great. He's got Photoshop 2015 one-on-one fundamentals. That's one of the things I love about Lynda. These are all photographers you and I know.
Yep.
Because they're not just great teachers, they're working professionals, and that's what's so cool about it. But there's also courses about business skills, things like creating customer value, negotiation, building a resume. Video? Sure. In fact, a lot of companies, including ours, will offer Lynda accounts to our staff. So they get better at doing their job. So when we moved to Premiere, of course, we said, hey, we got to, you know, take the courses you need to.
Right.
Pro Tools 12, essential training. How about that? There are brand new courses covering the newest Office 2016. Office 365 for the Mac just came out. Word, Excel, PowerPoint. Even a new course, I like this, on creating audio apps for iOS. That's an app development course about a specific category. That's how granular you can get. Now, what's great about Lynda, these are not YouTube videos. They're professionally produced.
I've been a member since almost the beginning, and it has jumped massively. You know, it used to be little screen captures and everything they got more popular.
They got studios and everything. Yeah, they really do a good job. And I think with the LinkedIn money, you know, LinkedIn bought them not so long ago, they're going to get better.
Well, there's the millions of people that are paying $25 a month happily. Pays for a lot of, it's amazing.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the difference between like free YouTube videos and a professional operation. And this is the best. They also have complete transcripts for every course. So you can search the transcript and jump to a part of the video that's going to be useful for you. And you can watch on the go, download them and watch them on your Android or iOS device without internet access.
That was something that's new. Or
I know. I love that.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Get on the plane and learn something before you land. You can do it as you please, too, because when you pay for lynda.com, what you do is you pay for the entire site, any of those thousands of videos and thousands of courses. So that means you can do it as you want. You can watch it end-to-end. Some people are very thorough, want to see everyone. Sometimes they just want, I just want this one thing. And you can do that, and you don't feel guilty because you got it all.
Right.
It's all you can eat.
And it's a little chunk. I watch typically like a 5-minute chunk. Like I search through there. I need to figure out how to do something like this in this area.
You know
what?
I'm
going to
search for S-Log 2. I just thought about that. I bet you there's a course on correcting video, S-Log 2 video.
There isn't. It'll be soon.
Lynda, lynda.com. We've got a 10-day trial for you for free. That's enough time to really see what's there. Maybe even take a full course if you want or two, if you're really ambitious. Lynda.com/MacBreak for 10 days free. I've been watching the basic photographic composition stuff Ben Long's doing. Of course, I'm always trying to get better at Lightroom. Lightroom is my tool of choice. Linda, LYNDA.com/MacBreak. Thank you, Linda, for your support. Let's see here. Andy Yanaka, why don't you start us off with your pick of the week?
I got a couple picks. First of all, The Prisoner is indeed available on iTunes and good. On Amazon Digital. There was only one season, so you can buy the whole thing. Definitely buy at least the pilot. Although, frankly, if anything sounds interesting, there's a recap. It's one of those old shows where the titles recap the entire premise of the show, so you're good for there. The other thing, though, is another astronomical app. Another astronomy app is called Star Chart for iOS. You recall there was another meteor shower last week, and it's the sort of thing where unless you have geeky friends, you might not know about it. And then when you do know about it, do you know exactly where to look? Do you know what time things are happening? And are you good at actually spotting things in the heavens? And so on one of these specific sort of situations, you will have the app will give you this little chart. That simply says, well, here are all the events that are happening in the next month, from eclipses to new moons to meteors to all kinds of cool stuff like that. And then there's also this really, really cool simply digital star chart where I can find Cassiopeia and I can find Orion. Anything else I may or may not, I can tell this is the sky-y part and that's the groundy part. And that's pretty much it. With this one, it is just you. The way this app really should work, you simply hold it up into the sky and the star chart will simply keep moving twist it. If you're not inside, it needs calibration. But basically, you basically have this window that will show you every single constellation, every single star that you're looking at. If you're looking for a specific event or a specific feature, there will actually be like little GPS arrows. No, move it this way, this way, this way. There you go. Now you're looking at it. Yes, you can sort of see. It's also pretty cool because obviously it's daylight here, and I really can't see stars. But here's the stars that I would be able to see if I were actually looking at it was daytime or nighttime. You can even point it downward, and it will show you if you were like on the other side of the planet. Maybe here's where the other side of the star bowl is. And I was looking for meteors the other day. I'm out in my front yard, got my cameras, and I got this app, and I'm thinking about my God, like the 10-year-old version of me would have gone nuts for this. The ability to not just have a flashlight and this printed book and trying to match pictures with shapes and just simply saying, okay, where's the Perseids? Okay, there it is. Okay, there you go. Now I'll look at that for the next 10 or 20 minutes. I believe it's free with a bunch of in-app purchases. Things like when the Perseids were happening, if you want the special Perseid package, that would be another couple of bucks.
Oh, that's cool.
Certainly worth it. For a good, well, it's you know what I've paid.
That would be the meteor showers package, right? $2.99.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Comet satellites. That's not bad.
Yeah, no, that's
particularly
great.
how cool the app is just in and of itself when you're not don't have a special feature to look for. Can't imagine that there is a better way to get kids interested in the heavens than this.
Well, to that point, if Andy's recommendation is not enough, look at this review on iTunes from Emily. Great app. I'm about to enter my sixth year at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry on the 1st of September. Astronomy was my best subject in fifth year due to this app. I really like astronomy, but used to struggle at it. I especially like how easy it was to discreetly check my work, as the entire course curriculum was basically in my pocket for whenever I may have needed it. Professor Sinistra never even noticed. Continuing astronomy at the Newt level next year. No doubt this app will help me along the way.
She better hope that Snape doesn't read the iTunes.
Snape is watching. It's free, but there are in-app purchases. Star Chart by Escape Velocity Limited. Good pick. Thank you, Andy. Mr. Rene Ritchie, your turn.
So I have two. I have one first that's incredibly self-serving, but for the last week, Trinity Caldwell has been slaving on taking all the Apple Music stuff that we've been putting together and turning it into an iBook.
So she is
done, and she's going to be submitting it, I believe, today, and it should be available in a week or so, depending on review times. I have no idea what those are for books, but it's already available for pre-order. We've got tons of pre-orders already, but she has
she used to do these amazing ebooks for Macworld, and it's been something we've been talking about since she came to iMore. And I saw the preview of it yesterday, and it's phenomenal what she can do with this material. So I'm super excited that it's already up on iTunes. You can see it on the iBook store already. And pre-order it, and it should be live in a week or so.
No, I will definitely get that because I've been very
confused. Serenity should almost have her own iBook imprint. It's sort of like when you find out that, okay, well, here's a new album by this band. I kind of like, oh, this person was the producer on that album. Oh, I'm definitely buying it now. Because if there's a trick to creating stuff in iBooks, then that Serenity doesn't know, that's not worth knowing.
Serenity Books. It's a good name.
And kudos to iTunes, sorry, to iBooks author, but the new version, usually she had to juggle three or four different programs to get things done, and it's let her do it in a much more efficient fashion, which is pretty awesome. The other thing I wanted to point out is, we didn't get to it in the show, so I thought I'd mention it, is iCloud has data recovery tools now. So if you go to iCloud.com and then you go to preferences, there's an advanced tab and you can go in there and they have file recovery. So if you've deleted something from iCloud Drive, even if you've purged it, like if you've deleted the trash on your Mac directory and you realize you really need it, you can go there and for up to 30 days, just like the deleted photos retention, you can go back and undelete it if you really need to get it back. It will also take snapshots of your archives of your calendar and your contacts, and you can restore previous databases. So it's not as convenient as restoring individual items, but if you know that something got corrupted in your calendar, or you got a slew of duplicates you want to roll back to the previous day or the previous week, you can go in there and do that, and it'll propagate across all of your devices, and it'll back up the current one as it's doing it in case you want to just grab a few things to save and then go back to your more recent version. So we put up a step-by-step process for doing that. Four files, calendars, contacts, reminders, and photos. And anytime you can stop people from data loss, it's a good thing.
I really like that. I said this last week, but I have to reiterate, the how-to stuff you've been doing is great. It's a good niche for you guys.
It's what the best thing in the world is just to help people get more out of their stuff.
Yep. Love it.
Which is sort of, Leo, I've been watching Call for Help, and it's on Canadian TV every day. Every day.
You can learn all about YouTube, that new video storage system. It's really going to go somewhere, I think.
Well, but it does show the value of helping people because technology, like you don't get a guide. Like you can take classes on how to drive a car, but people just drop a computer in your lap and walk away.
Yeah. No, it's a big part of our mission too. And I think it's great. By the way, don't search for Serenity Caldwell on the iBook store. Search for iMore.
Yeah, and it's also the Apple Music. There's a couple articles from me. There's a couple articles from Peter Cohen. So she did the lion's share of it by a
$4.99 pre-order available right now.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to do mine and then you can do yours. You can wrap it up. How about that, Alex?
Lindsay? Love it.
Because I always take the end of it, and I shouldn't, because that's the best space, the best place. I have we've talked before about the fact that, and I don't know if this is as much an issue for iOS and Apple users, because you all can use messages. You've got a cross-platform messaging solution. Mm-hmm. The problem is for those of us who don't, it's a big issue for me because I have an iPhone. So I am in people's messages as an iPhone user, which means they text me on messages. It doesn't go to my SMS. It doesn't go to my other phones. It only goes to my iPhone or my Mac.
Right.
So I'm always looking for a solution, a messaging solution that's cross-platform. There are a few things I would check off. One is that it runs everywhere, on desktop, on mobile, on every platform, iOS and Android, kind of equally. I like the idea that it might be secure and encrypted so that the AT&T folks and the NSA folks can't read it. I like, and to that end, it needs to be open source so we can verify that there are no backdoors. And free would be cool. I've got one. It's called Telegram. I've plugged it a couple of times now, and I'm going to continue to plug this till it becomes the universal messaging app for all humans everywhere. Written originally by the Durovs. Pavel Durov was the Mark Zuckerberg of Russia until Putin decided he wanted his business and forced him out. But what's neat about this is Durov came out with enough money that he funded this basically forever so that it will always be ad-free. It is open source, which means there are third-party versions of this as well, and an open source protocol that is about as fast as you can get. It's very impressive. Telegram is the name. There is an Apple a version of it in the App Store, so you can just download it from the App Store if you want to feel a little bit more comfortable. That's a desktop version. It's also available on iOS, so you can get Telegram for free for everywhere. And it does a lot of things very well. It allows you to send it's almost as easy to use to send audio as messages. You just press the thing and send, you know, kind of like Messages does. Also sends video images. It has a very nice sticker collection. You can add more easily. When you log in on one device, the stickers are propagated to every other device.
I found myself very obsessed with stickers and emojis.
Stickers are great.
Like, I really thought that they were silly. And then, I don't know, I've become very obsessed.
Well, you know what? It's nonverbal communication. The only problem with messaging is it's no point to have a great messaging solution if everybody you know doesn't use it. And that's right. It's so fragmented. I have Slack, HipChat, WhatsApp, Apple's Messages, mm-hmm. Hangouts, and I have people who message me in all of the above.
I have them on my friend's screen, and they're all across the top. It's just like,
yeah, whatever. I have a whole screen dedicated to it. Yeah. So I don't know if we want to add another one, but this one, it to me, it checks all the boxes. It uses a unique secure protocol. It also has a secure chat mode where the two of you are talking. Even Telegram, some servers don't see it. It's fully encrypted, and it will delete itself after 24 hours. So it's a right. Totally secure way to chat with somebody. I think it's just a really nice piece of software, and I'm going to use it. You know, it's funny. I mentioned this on iOS Today yesterday, and I said, but I don't know anybody who uses it. And I now have four or five new friends. And somebody even started a tech group. It has a group messaging up to 200 people at the same time. I love it. I love it, and I just wish more people would use this. Anyway, that's my plug for it. Free on the App Store and on both iOS and OS X. Yes, sir. What do you got for us?
I have one that's been discontinued, but I'm going to tell you about it because it's still available, and I still haven't found a better solution. So this is on – if you go to Amazon, you'll see the Seagate Backup Plus Portable Thunderbolt Adapter. It's getting a little expensive now. It used to be $100 until
I bought all of them. Thunderbolt adapter. Adapter for what?
So what this does is this is a SATA connection to a Thunderbolt, and you can take SSDs and just slide them in.
So you can take any bare drive, stick it in there.
You just shove it, any little like portable bare drive, SSDs, and plug them in. And then you have a Thunderbolt connection, so it's like screaming fast. Now, even at $100, it was incredible. At $275, it's still worth looking at if you're like me.
Right.
So here's the deal: is you get the SSD performance over Thunderbolt, and it is you can swap those drives out. So it's not just like an internal. You literally just pull it out, plug it in. Now, I have to admit, mine look a little geeky because they sometimes have gaff tape or credit cards underneath them if the drive is too small, and gaff tape to hold them in. And they do get a couple questions at security, although it's dropped. But the thing is I can go to any Fry's, any Best Buy, buy a new SSD when I'm on the road.
Just pop it in.
I've got a super fast drive, you know, and while the you pay once here, those little internals are very cheap. And then you're also when you want to send it to somebody. So if I want to send stuff back to the home office to be backed up, I don't have to send the entire enclosure. I just take my little SSD drive, I throw it in a FedEx and send it home. And then being able to pull, we record on SSDs. So we use the Blackmagic recorder or the sound devices, PIX 240, 250, 260s. And all of those are SSDs. And so we can just pull them out, set them here, transfer them. We can edit off this drive because it's a Thunderbolt.
Fast.
Well, it's a Thunderbolt. And then it's an SSD drive. So you can literally load up a gig of or terabyte of information and be editing on Final Cut or Premiere or whatever you want off of the external drive, which is a big deal on the road. There's a lot of drives there's a lot of drives that are available, and that's fine. But what you really want, or what I really want, is to be able to convert it. I mean, you know, be able to just slide any drive in that I bought anywhere from Best Buy or...
Not expensive, just $224. $275
on eBay. Someone said they found it for $180.
Okay,
so those are they're fast.
Good.
Anyway, that's my pick.
Search for Seagate. There it is. There's the eBay.
I don't know
version.
How long they're going to last. I think that they have been discontinued. That's why the price is going up.
Is there a difference between the desktop and the portable version?
Yeah, the desktop is for desktop size drives. You could possibly like
shoehorn, but you didn't want to
stick one. You know, stick a drive on top of that. It's the same connector. It's just that they have a larger drive system for those, and I have those desktops as well. I kind of got into the Seagate thing for a little while and stopped using their actual drives and just use these little sleds. I wish someone else would do it, but I haven't seen anybody else do it. I mean, people make enclosures and all kinds of other stuff. I just like this kind of raw speed, you know, grab anything and use it on the road. And I have two of them that are always with me.
Very cool. Here we go. Apparently we have one.
No.
No?
That's the...
This is from SanDisk.
Yeah, the PICs.
Oh, yeah. So this is what we put in as a cartridge in the PICs.
Right, and then what we do is...
put SSD drives on there, and that's the cartridge. The PICs is what we use to record the shows. It's from StreamPix.
Yeah, and what we do is we just then unscrew them, pop them out, put them into this, and start editing. You know, and of course that I did get a talking to from sound
you
devices.
They were unmount them.
Oh no, but they were like, you know, they're not really designed for that. You know, like
really?
The one thing I will say, the disclaimer is that I've been told that that the SSDs hard drives are really designed for 100 to 150 insertions. So if you do it all the time,
did you know that, John?
if you leave them in there, it's fine.
No, we pop them every day, right? We pop them, format them, and reuse them.
Yeah, every show.
Every show
we do.
Is another one of these.
It doesn't mean that they're
150 shows and out.
That's technically what they're.
Gee, we thought it was a good idea.
Well, that's what we do. We do it too. We just throw them away when they're
not. Yeah, that's why we're doing it, because of you.
We buy them cheap. We buy cheap SSD drives because we don't need usually more than 120 or 240.
Yeah, these are
gigs,
not giant.
And we use them, and when they stop working well, this is 240. We throw them away.
240. SanDisk Extreme 2.
Yep.
How much are these drives?
They're like $150.
$200. So it's a buck a show.
Yeah. And they last longer than that. It's just that what they're
they want them to be super reliable.
Yeah, and that, when you see drive failures, typically that's because that drive is old and we've done it.
Do we have redundancy? Never mind. I'm not going to ask about
this. Do we record twice?
Do we have redundancy?
Show two places. Right.
Five places.
There you have it.
Okay, that was one of those flowing. This was flying really, really low, right, so that the radar didn't track that joke.
Right.
I was kind of hoping that I'd have a bigger reaction to my "Do we have redundancy?" joke. Do we have redundancy? But that's.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
It should have been a better joke. It wasn't a good joke.
By the way, John C. Dvorak and I had an entire conversation composed entirely of stickers. The stickers are big in Telegram, which I really like. Can you show those?
One of my complaints about Slack, actually, is that
they're huge in line as well.
Yeah, big stickers are fun, and a lot of these are copyrighted images.
Apparently, they do huge licensing deals for them now, like Avengers stickers.
Yeah, no, there's no licensing deal here. They're just stolen. I do like the Steve Jobs though. That's good. Hey, thank you, everybody. That concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. I want to thank you all for being here, especially you, Alex Lindsay, coming all the way from Rwanda. That's a long commute.
It was 30 hours.
Come back next week. Say. Do it all over again.
Yes.
Are you going home to Pittsburgh, or are you going to stay here for a while?
I have moved back.
You're kidding me.
No, when I left in Rwanda, I lived in Pittsburgh, and when I landed, I was living in San Rafael.
Nice. Well, so, I guess we'll see more of you.
I moved to the East Coast thinking that I would. My big thing was I wanted my kids and my wife to meet my family, and I figured it'd be 1 or 2 years.
So you did spend about a year, right?
About a year, yeah. And in Pittsburgh, which was great, and I got to live on a big farm, and it was a lot of fun for my kids, and they got to know their cousins and their grandmother.
And Carly, they said, "Get us out of this place."
No, it really what happened was a lot of my business was on the East Coast, and then it all moved back to the West Coast, and so I was traveling really traveling all the time. And so, and we're gonna have a new studio. And
you just made me a very happy man.
Yeah, so I'm as of yesterday back in San Rafael and
nice.
in the Bay Area, and so I'll be here for at least a couple.
Welcome
years.
Home.
Yep.
Renee Ritchie, when are you moving to San Rafael?
Now I've got more reason to.
He's in Montreal.
Come on.
Thank goodness for Skype. iMore.com, of course, the place to find his work. At Renee Ritchie on the Twitter. Great to have you, Renee, as always. Mr. Andy Anatko is at the Chicago Sun-Times, but he does it from New England.
Although, again, like Renee, now I have more reason to move over there. Particularly, I was like, do you have like a pantry or something I could sublet for something less than $3,000 a month?
Rents are a little steep here in Northern California.
The market's a little spicy, I got to say.
I will say that we moved back. I did not save money by moving back. It was it was painful.
Well, you probably weren't even paying rent in the farmhouse, were you? It was a family-owned property. And
so I figured that's averaging out now. That's my justification for what
well,
I'm
Well, the good news
rent.
Is here in California, there are no commercials for children. So your kids are protected and safe.
Well, there isn't any for me anyway. I'm no cable.
No cable, no commercials. No money, no problems. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC. I would love it if you watch live, but if you can't, don't worry. On-demand audio and video are always available for all of our shows on the website, in this case, twit.tv/MBW, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts, like iTunes, subscribe. That way you don't miss a week. But I'm afraid, friends, it's time to get back to work because break time is over. See you next time. Bye-bye.